Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. So good to have you with us today. I hope you're holding up well, whether you're working from home or whether at this point you've got no job to go to. We've heard from so many listeners who are really struggling right now, and our hearts go out to you. We're going to do our best to give you information that's hopefully useful to keep you up to date on what's going on with COVID-19. And we, as we're doing every day, also providing you with a medical expert to answer your questions about COVID-19, just to provide as much clarity as possible about the coronavirus itself, as well as about the public health measures that are being taken, which have had such a dramatic effect on all of our lives, as well as on our local and national economy. I just want to begin with an update to something that unfolded on the program yesterday. In case you didn't hear the segment in which we talked about efforts to reach out to homeless Angelenos who were living in cars and in vans, living in tents, under overpasses, and how they were going to be protected from COVID-19. We had a listener, Reggie, call in, who'd been living in his car in Baldwin Park for the past 5 days or so, and he had symptoms which he thought were indicative of a possible coronavirus. He'd gone to the hospital, he said, and they told him that, well, if his symptoms get worse, he can call 911, have an ambulance take him from his car where he was living. Andy Bales, who's the head of the Union Rescue Mission, was one of our three guests on that segment, and he provided his personal number to Reggie. They connected. Reggie went into the Union Rescue Mission last night. I talked with him on the phone this morning. He sounded so much better health-wise than he did yesterday on the phone. He spent the night. He saw the nurse there at the Union Rescue Mission, and he's under medical care now. So I just wanted to update you. I know that many of you were concerned about his condition, and so it's good news. And I'm so thankful for all the wonderful providers of services to our homeless neighbors who were able to help Reggie in his circumstance. And he gave us permission for me to share this on the air today. So, Reggie, we're with you, and thank you very much for being willing to share that, because we were concerned about you. Yesterday, during the White House press briefing, President Trump and members of the Federal Coronavirus Task Force laid out the latest statistics and looked down the road about COVID-19. President Trump was asked about a statement he'd made earlier in the news on Fox News Channel about his belief that the country could get back more to normal by Easter.
I think we're looking at a timeline. We're discussing it. We had a very good meeting today. You know, if you add it all up, that's probably 9 days plus another 2.5 weeks. It's a period of time that's longer than the original 2 weeks. So we're going to look at it. We'll only do it if it's good. And maybe we do sections of the country. We do large sections of the country. That could be too. But no, we're very much in touch with Tony and with Deborah.
After that, we had news conferences from California Governor Gavin Newsom. That was last evening. New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo this morning both said they didn't think that was going to be feasible in their states, given how the infection rates and the death rates, COVID-19, were climbing day by day. But joining us to talk about whether it might be possible in as soon as 3 weeks for some parts of the country to see businesses start to open is Dr. Dean Bloomberg. Dr. Bloomberg is Chief of Pediatric Infectious Diseases at UC Davis Children's Hospital. Sir, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, good morning, Larry.
We've heard here in California, New York, this is highly unlikely by Easter, given what we're seeing with statistical growth. Do you think it is possible in certain parts of the country that using physical distancing and age-related staying at home, that those could be sufficient?
Anything is possible, but I think what we should look at it as what is going to be likely. And in all likelihood, areas of the country that don't have much involvement right now, they don't know it, but they probably do have involvement, and they just haven't been testing enough, so they just haven't found it. So expect the entire country to be severely affected. and this will ramp up over the next 2 to 4 weeks.
So even in rural areas where people don't tend to be in the kinds of, you know, physical proximity to others that they are in New York City or urban parts of California, even there, there's going to be high risk?
Yeah, you have to realize that everybody in the entire country is susceptible to this virus. Nobody has immunity. Nobody's had this infection before. Nobody's been immunized against this. So in all likelihood, everybody, even in the most rural areas, will be exposed to this eventually, and we're going to have widespread transmission.
If you have questions for Dr. Dean Blumberg, UC Davis Children's Hospital, he's chief of pediatric infectious diseases, we're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. You can also ask your question on our AirTalk page, kpecc.org, or you can post a question to the AirTalk Facebook page or tweet at AirTalk with your question. One of the things that we're seeing is a dramatically higher infection rate in New York than in California, and death rate. The infection rate, you could attribute much of that to more testing being done in New York. But do you think, Dr. Blumberg, that there are differences in the two states that relate to the lower rates?
Yeah, I think the main thing is that New York, of course, is such a concentrated area in terms of population. So once the virus gets to these to the city centers, you're going to see more transmission. And that also depends on the socialization patterns within that city. So New York, everybody's going out, everybody's interacting in a very concentrated area. So that'll be an area that's ripe for an explosive outbreak that they're seeing. I don't expect that the death rate should really vary much within the U.S., at least. I think it should be relatively homogeneous, but there are limitations in testing availability. Where you're having an outbreak, you're going to have the most severe cases more likely to be tested. So initially, I think you're going to see a relatively high death rate, but I think that's a matter of who's being tested.
All right, 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Dr. Blumberg, do you think we're going to get to the point where there's almost universal testing so that asymptomatic people will be able to determine if they're safe to be on the front lines of medical care or other such things?
Yeah, we've had such limitations in testing availability in this country. You know, it's been much more widespread availability in other countries before the U.S. had it. And so since we've had such limited capacity to test, we really haven't been able to gather the data that we need to know where transmission is most likely occurring. And I'm really pleased over the past week or so that we've had more widespread availability. We've had more rapid testing turnaround times. And I expect that to continue so that even patients who are less severely affected and maybe even those who are asymptomatic, it may be appropriate to test them also.
We have some more coronavirus news. Canada announced today it's imposing mandatory self-isolation for those returning to Canada. That under Canada's Federal Quarantine Act. The Deputy Prime Minister said it begins at midnight tonight. The requirement will be for 14 days. There are going to be penalties announced later today. Now, the reason I bring this up, particularly for AirTalk listeners, I know that we have many of you in the Coachella Valley who are Canadian citizens, who during the winter you go to the Coachella Valley and spend time there. So what this says is that for those who are returning, as from Southern California, will be mandated to have a 14-day quarantine. So more than a million Canadians and permanent residents returned to Canada just in the past week between March 14th and March 20th. Now, many of those people, I'm assuming, are people who were in the United States, in warm weather states where they spend all or part of the winter. And this is the time of year where people start returning to Canada. So I just want to bring this to your attention. The mandatory quarantine does not apply to truck drivers nor to healthcare workers who are crossing the border. So they don't want to have trade at all affected by this. But just want to alert those of you who are Canadians who are looking at returning to Canada in the coming weeks that this has just been mandated by the Canadian government. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Here in Los...
I don't mind. I'd just like to jump in.
Yes, yes, Dr. Blumberg.
Perspective. So in the U.S., we've had more than 55,000 reported cases, and almost 99% of those have been reported over the last 15 days. So you can see how this is really ramping up in the U.S. Canada has reported less than 2,000 total cases. And so from Canada's perspective, the U.S. is a real hot spot, and they really do want to limit transmission so that the healthcare system will not be overwhelmed.
All right. What is the timeline for testing becoming more widely available in California?
Well, I would say it's daily. More hospitals are having more rapid tests, and more labs are coming online. So that the rapid tests initially, we were having a 1 to 2 week turnaround time with some of the commercial labs that were overwhelmed with the number of specimens that they were receiving. And then our hospital, for example, has gone from 24-hour turnaround time to less than 6-hour turnaround time. And we hope by the end of this week to have a 2-hour turnaround time. So, you know, every day it's changing, and it's changing for the better in terms of being able to get these tests back.
Squid GoPro, writing on our AirTalk page at kpcc.org, was wondering if it was true that the governor of Nevada banned the use of hydroxychloroquine for treatment of COVID-19. That's the related to the anti-malarial drug. Wondering why they would do that when it appears it's potentially, along with azithromycin, potentially helps with COVID-19. Dr. Blumberg, can you speak to that issue of that combination therapy for COVID-19?
Yeah, I can, and I'll just say that I'm not aware of what the governor did.
Yeah, I haven't heard about that at all.
Yeah, but hydroxychloroquine and hydroxychloroquine both appear to be quite active. They have antiviral properties in the lab, in the petri dish. You can inhibit viral growth with both of those. Azithromycin has some promise also, not as much as the chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine. And unfortunately, even though these haven't been proven in real life to work, there's already been hoarding and limited availability of these medications.
All right. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. We also have a number of listeners who are asking about what appears to be the gender difference in fatality rates from COVID-19. We know that with typical influenza, that it's actually men that appear to be more vulnerable, but it appears with COVID-19 that women are somewhat more vulnerable. And I was wondering if, is it the opposite, actually? I think I got it reversed. Can you speak to that issue of gender difference?
Yeah, the initial reports out of China had a much higher mortality in men compared to women. And as this has spread worldwide and we're getting data from other countries, such as the outbreak in Italy, it appears that these differences are not as dramatic. And so that may have something to do with social patterns in China, where men may be more likely to be exposed, or other factors that may not have been accounted for, such as smoking or air pollution.
So the theory that estrogen might have a protective benefit from COVID-19, it appears that's unlikely?
Yeah, I'm not aware of that. I know for every infectious disease except for one, men are more likely to be infected than women. So it's not surprising that there's more cases in men.
We're at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. We're talking with UC Davis Children's Hospital Chief of Pediatric Infectious Diseases, Dr. Dean Blumberg. Dr. Blumberg, we had the first death in the United States of a patient under the age of 18 right here in Southern California in the L.A. County city of Lancaster. There's going to be an investigation to determine, get more details about the cause of death. What might be looked at there to try and confirm that was fully related to COVID-19?
Well, yeah, it's a really tragic situation. You know, the first reports out of China, when they first reported the first 72,000 cases, they had no deaths under 19 years of age. So we were pleased in terms of children being spared with this. But really, it was only a matter of time before children were going to be severely affected from this. And just like with influenza, children can be affected severely with this because it may cause a viral pneumonia. The immune response may be more exuberant than we would like, and then you can get respiratory distress syndrome, a severe pneumonia, a viral sepsis type picture, and then you can get bacterial superinfection on top of that. So you can get a bacterial pneumonia on top of the viral pneumonia. So it really is, hopefully this is going to be rare in children, but with enough children being affected, we will see more deaths.
Julie writes on the page, is the virus going to hit harder in states with higher rates of underlying conditions, diabetes, smoking, obesity?
Yeah, we think so. We don't have that much data, but we think that smoking is going to increase. People who smoke are going to have increasing severity of disease. And the reports from China showed that anybody with any kind of comorbidity, any kind of chronic illness such as heart disease, diabetes, obesity, hypertension, that those patients do have an increased risk of severity and increased risk of dying from this.
We're talking with Dr. Dean Blumberg of UC Davis Children's Hospital. He's chief of pediatric infectious diseases. We'll continue with your calls. You can ask him questions both about COVID-19 and the public health measures that are being taken to try and address it. I just want to remind you that overall, we need to raise $1 million here at KPCC during what is typically our spring member drive. We suspended the typically longer fundraising portions of the program so that we could bring you in-depth coverage of COVID-19, so that we could also bring listeners together, as we will in the second hour, to talk about how their lives have changed as a result of the public health measures to control the spread of the coronavirus. I'm asking you right now to please support Air Talk, as so many have so generously over these past several days. It's just been extraordinary to see the outpouring of support. You can make your gift right now at 866-888-5722, or you can click and join at kpcc.org. Every contribution right now is absolutely key in supporting what we're doing at KPCC. We are more than three quarters of the way to our $1 million overall that we need to raise. We have a brand new iPad Pro that we're giving away today and today only for those who contribute our iPad Pro sweepstakes. The new Pro just released today by Apple. One lucky listener will get it at 866-888-5722 to make your contribution, or online, kpcc.org. Donate now to get into the sweepstakes. Back in a minute. It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. Later this hour, we'll talk about the many creative scams that con artists have put together, from phishing efforts to coming up with websites that are going to install malware, all kinds of things that they've got going. Door-to-door sales of test-at-home COVID-19 kits, phony, of course. all these kinds of things to try and part people from their money and to prey on our fears about COVID-19. So we'll talk about that. Right now, we're focused on the virus itself, what we're learning about it, as well as public health measures to control the spread of it. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Zach in Valley Village, you're on AirTalk.
Yes, my question deals with moving. We have a newborn, two-month-old, and we'll be moving from the L.A. area in Valley Village to Long Beach. I'm just wondering how safe that is.
All right, Dr. Blumberg.
Yeah, well, first, congratulations on your newborn.
Yes.
You know, for the whole family, for everybody, if you could just try to limit exposure to anybody for the time being, so the neighbors and everybody else, maintain that social distance of 6 feet to try to keep that out of your family. For your newborn, the good news is that for children, they really almost all the time have very mild disease or are even asymptomatic.
All right. Zach, thanks very much, and hope all goes well with the move. We appreciate it. Jose in Downey, you're on Air Talk.
Yes, good morning. I'd like to ask if someone tests positive and they ask them to stay at home, has anybody survived the virus without strong medical intervention just by staying home and taking over-the-counter medicine like cough drops, Tylenol? You know, these people that have survived the virus, has any one of them, as far as you know, has survived it without strong medical intervention?
Yeah, good question, Jose. Dr. Blumberg?
Yeah, thanks, Jose, for that. So the vast majority of people who get this infection will get better all on their own without any medical intervention. So 80% of people who get this have mild or moderate or even asymptomatic infection. So it'll be just like a regular cold. You'll have runny nose, cough, sore throat, and fever. And then after a few days, you'll get better. And so as long as you're able to maintain your fluid intake so you don't get dehydrated, and as long as you're not having difficulty breathing and shortness of breath, staying home is the way to go.
All right, Jose, thanks very much. I wanted to ask you about the shortage of ventilators. New York, we were hearing from Governor Andrew Cuomo earlier today that they are just way short. They're looking at potentially patients sharing ventilators, as was done in Italy, but trying to find a better way of doing that, because that comes with its own risks when patients share them. I thought it might be good for you to describe just sort of basically why ventilators are so critical for some COVID-19 patients.
Yeah, so some patients won't have just an upper respiratory infection. They won't have just a cold, but they may actually have a lower respiratory tract infection. So the virus can go into the lungs and cause pneumonia. If the pneumonia is severe enough, some patients will require not only supplemental oxygen, but they won't be able to breathe effectively on their own. And that's when they may need to be put on a ventilator, where they may be intubated, a breathing tube inserted through their nose or mouth, into their trachea, the breathing tube, and then the ventilator does the work for them, delivering oxygen to the lungs. So these are life-saving machines. These are what we see in the intensive care units. And the whole idea behind the extreme public health measures that have been taking place, the social distancing, closing of businesses and schools, is to make sure that we keep people from getting sick and overwhelming hospitals so that we do have sufficient resources to take care of patients.
Dr. Blumberg, while we're talking medical devices, we had a listener who wanted to ask about the difference between medical masks and respirators. What's the difference in what we're talking about?
You know, sometimes people call a mask a respirator because we are breathing through it. But the respirators or ventilators are generally, people view those as the machines that are in the ICUs. And then the masks, there's several different types of masks. There's the surgical masks. Those are the rectangular ones that you commonly see. And then there's the N95 masks. Those are more of the oval ones that provide a tighter fit. And sometimes people call those respirators also.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Dean Blumberg, UC Davis Children's Hospital. We really appreciate your spending this half hour with us today.
Great. Thank you, Larry.
He's chief of pediatric infectious diseases at the Davis Children's Hospital. You're listening to AirTalk on 89.3 KPCC.